promises you can keep.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy. It's Monday, February 20th. And we have one bill on the docket, House Bill 4128. And so I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4128A. And I know that Val Hoyle, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, want to come forward. Sandy, should I have you describe the bill? I always forget to have you describe the bill. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4128 comes to you from the House with 57 ayes and 3 excused. This is a bill that requires the health benefit plans to cover medically necessary dental or orthodontic services for the treatment of craniofacial anomalies. There is no revenue impact. It has a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued. And the proponents of the bill are before you, Madam Chair.
Hi, I'm Val Hoyle, State Representative from House District 14, West Eugene, and Junction City. And I will start off, not out of any disrespect to the Senate, but I figured we'll save the best for last. So this is a bill that requires group and individual health insurance policies covering hospital, surgical, and dental services to cover medically necessary procedures relating to craniofacial anomalies identifiable at birth, so mostly cleft lip and palate. So with cleft lip and palate, the proper treatment is surgery, and the best form of treatment is surgery and orthodontia. In the past, insurance companies that covered medical care did not cover the orthodontia because they don't cover dental. And then dental companies didn't cover the orthodontia for cleft lip and palate. So what we did was there was a bill in the 2011 session about this, and the insurance companies, the dentists, and the dental insurance companies said, we can pass something in 2013, but let's just sit down and figure out who should cover what. Because at the end of the day, this bill saves money, improves treatment, and makes it a lot easier for the children who are getting treatment for cleft lip and palate. Because without the orthodontia, the child has to have more surgeries and doesn't have as good of an outcome as if they get the orthodontia. So, I mean, I will say that John Powell and Tom Holt from Regents were phenomenal in terms of sitting down with us and working out the details. ODS and then Georgia Coolidge from the dentist sat down and worked out a system where this is something that covers important services, it saves money, it saves lives, and there was no opposition in the House.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. I'm the state senator from District 17, and thank you for inviting me to testify on this bill. Representative Hoyle said she was going to leave the best for last. Frankly, I think she's covered most of the critical points on this, and I'm not sure I have a lot left to add, except to say this. We know, and I think I've said this about 12,000 times this session, because it seems to be true of most of the bills we're considering, this is definitely an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure bill. If we invest up front in treating these children properly, it will save us lives, health, and money down the road. And so doing this is only logical. This is not cosmetic. This is not even mildly functional. This is a true issue of correcting something as fundamental as a broken leg. If we had someone with a broken leg, we wouldn't say that insurance shouldn't cover taking care of that broken leg and the appropriate therapy afterwards to rehabilitate. This is equivalent to that. And I will be delighted to support this bill, and I hope you will as well. Thank you.
Great. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a child is born with a cleft palate. At what age can they do the surgery? I mean, right away or?
Chairman Sanderson, Senator Cruz, it depends a little bit on how severe the cleft lip and palate are and how big the child is and at what age gestation the child was born. Generally, these are undertaken in some stages, but usually not until about 6 months of life. But the defects that remain occur as the child develops, grows teeth, and develops permanent teeth. These things remain over time. One clarification I would make, if I could, this says cover medically necessary procedures related to craniofacial anomalies identifiable at birth. One of the anomalies that's listed here, craniosynostosis, actually often does not become apparent until 4 to 6 months of life. Am I correct, Senator Bates?
I would agree.
Thank you. And so I
hope that's a second opinion fashion of yet at all.
I get billed for that.
I hope that the language in this bill, I haven't, to be perfectly honest, read every word of it. I hope the language does not specify that the defects have to be identifiable at birth, because these wounds. Great, thank you. So that is important. Does that answer your question, Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just curious.
If I could add, some of these are kind of subtle at first.
Yes.
And surprising how long it takes to really uncover them. I have one patient who was about 7 or 8 before things were just odd. I hate to say that word, but kind of odd. Facial features weren't quite right. And as we got into it, he got older. He couldn't swallow properly and didn't grow properly because of it. And he's now gone through some significant surgery up at OHSU, and he's come around. But it took a while to make that diagnosis. It wasn't obvious. And some of these are very subtle congenital abnormalities that are tricky to find sometimes.
No further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Steiner, we are going to have you carry this bill.
Thank you.
You're finally going to have a bill that we can just rake you over the
shoulder. Oh, we can't do that with this one either. It's kids.
I just got lead poisoning out of education, so
you
can choose.
That's going to be just fine.
Okay,
just hilarious. Bury my questions as I sit here.
That was a hell of a straight line. I'll let it go.
I'll figure out something good.
I'm curious why this bill has not, I don't recall in my memory of this coming forward.
Representative Hoyle?
Yes.
Why are these not covered? I've never
wondering. Why we've never saw this bill before?
I think that Senator Chairman Sanderson, committee, it last year it came to a House Policy Committee and died, and then we decided we work in a work group, and then it came to the House Policy Committee. Went down to Ways and Means because there was a fiscal put on it because there was a concern that this would cover TMJ. We had an amendment to specify that there was no TMJ, then there was no fiscal, and then it came out of Ways and Means.
Policy Committee.
Follow-up question?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It didn't. I'm sorry. No. Why haven't you seen it before? I don't know. That's why we're having a public hearing.
Hey, could I have a follow-up on that? And I was going to ask the same question off the record. I've never seen this not covered by an insurance company, but I've seen very few cases because it's so rare. Have there been cases where it's not been covered by an insurance company?
Yes, and I think there's going to be someone that will come up afterwards. So the orthodontia is not covered because, quite frankly, for a medical insurance company that doesn't cover orthodontia, that's not standard. So that's the problem. So what this does is just a fix saying that, you know, if there's a dental insurer that covers orthodontia, then they need to pay that first. And then if you have a health insurance company, that they would then cover the orthodontia. So, and I'm sorry that I answered the question wrong about why you hadn't seen it before. I was thinking about a different bill.
Well, and I think that OHP already covers it.
OHP does cover the orthodontia and the medically necessary treatment.
So basically, we're just redefining, calling it medically necessary, so it is covered.
Yeah, and again, this was this is not opposed by anybody.
Well, I mean, that's a definitional change to.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Is that helpful?
You have a. Chairman Sanderson.
I see people in the back laughing, and I don't know if they're laughing at this or something else.
They're laughing at me? I don't want to know if they are.
They're probably laughing at me because I'm going to go through carrying this bill if it's my first one.
Madam Chair, this appears to be non-controversial. They're probably talking about something entirely different.
All right. Thank you very much. Dean Hale, Reagan Gray?
I didn't see her.
Or just redefine it as a medical condition.
Good afternoon, Chair Larry.
Monis Anderson and Vice Chair Jeff Cruz, members of the committee. I do want to speak in support of H.R. 4128. My name is Dean Hale, and I am from Eugene. I'm just a father, and I'm taking time from work to come and testify this afternoon. First, I want to say that nothing that I will not personally benefit from this bill as my child is grown now. In Oregon, about 70 children are born with a cleft lip and palate each year. Sadly, many of the children are not getting the medically necessary services they need. HB 4128 follows a nationwide trend, and 16 other states have similar laws in place now. My daughter was born with a severe bilateral cleft lip and palate. She's had 15 surgeries for major medical intervention and 400 speech therapy sessions. Getting insurance approvals for the medically necessary procedures was difficult, with routine denial for anything with the word dental or orthodontic. On the way to Portland, there's a billboard with a photo of a cleft-affected child. They ask for donations to help close a lip. This transforms lives, but closing the lip is only a small fraction of the restorative work needed. Kids with clefts often require many surgeries and special dental and orthodontic services. Many of these surgeries cannot be done without before and after orthodontia and dental services. Insurance companies that deny these dental and orthodontic services do harm to cleft-affected children. This often creates a dead end for treatment. This marginalizes children with unrestored function. They cannot eat or speak correctly, and many face stigma educationally, socially, and in the workplace. So the simple denial of dental and orthodontic services sets up a person for downward spiral. The dental and orthodontic bills that I've had have resembled luxury car payments for 10 years. It's a huge drain. But as a parent, I sacrifice what is necessary for a child. The family car got so old that we risked breakdowns on the way up to OHSU. And the suit I'm wearing today is one I inherited from my father in the 1990s. The denial of orthodontic services for children with craniofacial disorders limits treatment and surgical options. Those who don't get treatment are marginalized and have difficulty. This negatively affects our Oregon workforce. Last year, my daughter's treatments were done, but we just discovered some regression and her front teeth are hitting one another. This affects speech, chewing, and digestion. There are two options. The first is surgical, the second is orthodontic. Orthodontic is cheaper, but not covered by insurance. But surgery is not ideal, as scar tissue from previous surgeries compromise the chance of success. And with every surgery, there's a chance of mortality. So, language can drive bad practice. Another surgery was not in my daughter's best interest. So, a short-sighted policy, ostensibly to save money, will actually cost more money and put patients at risk. This is dysfunctional. These are the facts. While I can be a good advocate for my child, most parents get overcome and worn out by the system, and they give up. I've seen this many a time when I attend the craniofacial clinics. Oh, and I want to talk about my daughter. The glee that she expressed when the surgeries were complete and she could actually bite an apple. That was, as they said, is priceless. She's a thriving college freshman thanks to some scholarships. She loves theater and is considering a career in diplomacy or human resources or law. Her resilience will ensure her success in any career choice she chooses. And again, whatever happens with H.R. 4128 is too late to benefit my family, so I have no self-interest in this. But this bill will be a godsend for many Oregon families. It is now time to pass this legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hale, for bringing this forward. In your testimony, you mentioned briefly about your interaction with an insurance company that you felt unfairly denied your claim, and then you presumably filed a complaint with the insurance division. Can you tell me about that and how that process went?
Yes, Senator Shields. I like to call the interactions I've had with insurance companies is delay, deny, and obfuscate. Wear them out. You go through primary appeal, secondary appeal, tertiary. When you're caring for your kid and your kid's your priority, you get lost in the paperwork. you sometimes don't get through. The one thing I did get in the insurance company was is they failed to notify me of due process rights. That's what they got fined for. But that did not fix the problem, and I didn't have an opportunity to go back and to go through the appeal process. So sometimes I lost. I had to accept that and do what's necessary.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. So do you know what the fine was for the insurance company?
It's been 15 surgeries, Senator Shields.
Yeah.
This would have been most recent about 5-6 years ago.
Okay. Well, I'm easy to find on the web. If you happen to come across that information, feel free to forward it to me. And the reason I ask is that the insurance companies have argued that they don't need to be incorporated under the state's Unfair Trade Practices Act, and because the insurance division is a good enough regulator. And I'd just like to see how that hypothesis plays out in the real world.
Thank you, Senator. I would like to add that the Oregon Insurance Commission has been wonderful. They've been supportive at critical times. They were a good coach.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Thank you so much for being here. And although it may not have solved your situation, it certainly is going to help people down the road. Thank you.
That's my hope, Senator.
Okay.
This is just strictly for background information. The reference to TMJ, I assume that's the temporomandibular
joint disease. Yeah.
Joint disorder. What is that, Dr. Bates?
TMJ is a dysfunction of the big joint right here. It gets inflamed. It's commonly caused by people grinding their teeth at night when they're asleep or other times. There used to be surgeries did for it. None of them worked, and it made things worse. There's other ways of treating it, with bite plates, physical therapy, sometimes muscle relaxant at night. But it's something that has nothing to do with this at all, and it's very common, and it would probably be expensive if you start opening up. And surgery, while it's still being offered, does not work. It's a waste of money, and people can end up with really terrible situations where they can't even chew after that surgery. So it's been pretty well discounted as a procedure. But there are other ways of treating it, but that is not what this is about. It's not a congenital abnormality. It's not something kids have. It's something adults have primarily. And it's treatable now under another condition, in other ways, other than surgery.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, to Dr. Bates, I'm assuming you call it TMJ because you can't pronounce that first word.
I can barely get through it. Temporal mandibular joint disease. It's temple mandible coming up. It's a double-jointed joint. And the amount of jaw pressure used right there is really pretty amazing. You bite down, the pressure in that joint's amazing. Okay. So we call it TMJ.
Okay.
Don't ask me to spell it. It's even worse.
Gray and John Powell.
Mandible.
Yes. Is this the buccinator muscle?
The what?
Is this the buccinator muscle?
Buccinator?
Buccinator.
I don't know. I don't remember my anatomy.
I was going to say, are we going to have an A&P class?
I think it's the strongest muscle in the body, what I've been told.
I thought it was masticator muscle. It goes up through and attached to the temporal bone, comes up. You can see in horses chewing it really hard. It's one of the strongest ones out there, and the leverage on that is huge. Now I go back with my anatomy on it. Thank you very much for exposing
Reagan,
my ignorance.
Reagan, please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Reagan Gray. I'm the Policy Director for Children First for Oregon, and we're here in support of House Bill 4128. Children First has long been an advocate for children's health care, and we see access to dental treatment for cleft palates as an important step forward for children. The oral facial clefts are the most common of the craniofacial conditions, otherwise known as birth defects. Cleft palates negatively affect a child's growth, skeletal development, and teeth, as well as their breathing, speech, hearing, learning, and language abilities, which negatively affects their ability to succeed in school and later succeed in life. Rather than reading my testimony to you, I just wanted to say that, you know, this bill we think will guarantee that children born with cleft palates will have their best start in life, and that Children First really wants to urge you to vote yes on this bill. Thank you. Any questions?
Questions. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
I think it's temporomandibular
joint.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Before you, in support of amended House Bill 4128, as Representative Hoyle presented to you, we've been consulting her on this as the bills move forward and are in full support.
Questions? Thank you very much. With that, I see no further public testimony. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4128A, and I would like to open a work session on House Bill 4128A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4128A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4128A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'll vote yes if it's not going to Ways and Means.
Clerk will call the roll.
We could have stopped that a long time ago.
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Steiner Hayward will carry the bill and close the work session on House Bill 4128A. And colleagues, we have no other bills that have been assigned to our committee.
Yay!
We may have an informational hearing. We are putting a call in to public health, and I don't know if there's someone else that would like to have an informational hearing on anything, but we do have time, because I don't think any more bills are going to be coming to this committee.
Well, Madam Chair, there are some informationals that I think we need to be doing, but the dermatologist in Coos Bay, for example, but I've suggested that some of those may be better, we may be better served
in a committee that doesn't meet at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, once we're out of the insanity of the session and into legislative days, when maybe we're a little more deliberative in our thought process and not quite so scrambled.
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, in the flow of bills and committees, assignments, and what have you, the one thing that continues to bother me is the long-term view of healthcare transformation and the inclusion of 250,000 lives that is mandated, and the timing and the sequence and how that all fits into our budgeting, when I don't know where the money is going to come from, when the kind of the front end push from the federal government ends. And the expectation that we will cover that many more lives through healthcare transformation is, that's a hill, I believe, too steep to climb. And at some point in time, I'd like to see that long-term look of healthcare, assuming that the ACA is not overturned or materially changed in this next
Would that be a topic for an informational hearing?
I think that long-term view. Now we're okay. Up to our eyebrows trying to get stuff out of this building right now.
Yeah.
But long-term, I don't know where it's going to come from. And if my understanding of what is required by expanding the covered lives, the eligibility, is incorrect, then I'll not worry, but
I had a conversation with Congresswoman Bonamici at lunch, and she said she'd have it all figured out within a few days.
it is a good discussion. I think the discussion is going to evolve around what the benefits are going to be, and let me tell you why. Right now, there's nobody in America that goes without health care. It may be delayed, maybe late, maybe in an emergency room in a hospital, it should have been an outpatient service. So if you get down to a benefit package that is really the things you need, and you're doing the things you're going to do already, you'll probably do them cheaper. The problem becomes the benefit package gets expanded, and you start doing things that are no longer covered now, either by default or by an actual plan. There's not enough money to cover that. There's no way enough money to cover that. So the benefits can be the question. Because if you think it through, everyone who gets sick either dies or goes to the emergency room if they haven't got health insurance. Okay, but there's a lot of stuff that's covered in these benefit plans that won't cause death, you won't die from, but you might want to have fixed. And that's where the money is. Do you really need that hip? You need that knee? You need to do some things that you'd like to have, but you may not necessarily have to have. That's where the money is.
Senator Shields?
Actually, I'll take a pass.
Okay.
Actually, Madam Chair, I understand that, Senator, but I'd also suggest, I think one of the things Senator Morris is getting to is the fact that Congress has said, whether they actually come through or not, on money is always speculative, but the expanded population, there's supposed to be some bridge funding, but it's only bridge funding.
Bridge funding. And that's why I agree. It's that you're setting up an entitlement program with an open-ended benefit plan to it.
Yeah. And it's worthy of
serious discussion.
That may take more than an hour, like we did during legislative days leading up to this session, when we spent an hour on each meeting on transformation, and then, but we had that conversation, didn't we?
I know we did. We need to have more.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, Senator.
Are there other topics, though? If you do think of them, would you just email them to Sandy? Because I would like to start thinking of informational hearings in May, September, and November. But we may not meet again if there aren't any more bills coming. That's the point.
Just to inform the members of the committee, this dermatologist in Coos Bay, she's working into a non-insurance model of health care delivery, which we had a couple clinics last session. And for basic primary care, I think that sort of template is something that needs serious exploration. And I'm kind of excited when I find out that there are other people looking at that sort of...
And it actually ties back into what Senator Morris is talking about. If you change and get off fee-for-service in primary care, there might be some huge savings there. And you can do a lot of work without having to actually see the patient and do it a lot more efficiently. Okay.
Really not having to do billing codes and, okay.
I know. Oh, God, I know.
We heard from, a couple of NPs and I think internists that are operating in the Portland area on a capitated
cash
model.
Cash basis, yeah.
But it's their capitated model, not through a third-party payer.
But they're not taking Medicare, Medicaid, or commercial insurance. We're talking about a wider thing of going to everything that way.
But that sort of approach...
But that's still the right approach.
Yeah.
I agree. No argument. That's an approach. That's the bill. That was Ways and Means. We heard a federal bill about that, too, Ways and Means. So.
Well, thank you, committee. It's been delightful for our first session. We're adjourned.
Does that mean we can go
for a short session?